basement. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour, brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group's Bill's Wire. My name is Kyle Selagi. I always forget to do that part. One could say it is an important part to introduce yourself, but also the name of the podcast. It's kind of self-explanatory, but whatever. The Buffalo Bills are 6-2 following a decisive, dominant, just wonderful overall 24-9 victory over the Washington Redskins. And we're here to discuss our takeaways from the game. I'm joined by two guests, one of whom is not Rich Kowalski. Usual resident guest Rich Kowalski is not here this week because he is in Buffalo. Now, you may be thinking, if he's in Buffalo, if he's closer to you, wouldn't it make the podcast easier to do? No, it would not make the podcast easier to do. But that's a side note. Rich will be back next week, maybe with a special episode. We just tossed some ideas before we went live here on this pre-recorded podcast. So you'll see next week if it's a special episode. But actually here, joining me to discuss, first, it's returning from a one-week absence. It's McKenna Middlebrook. McKenna, how are you?
I'm fine. The Bills won, but Manchester United lost to Bournemouth. Ooh. AFC.
Ooh.
It's horrendous. You know, you can never go both ways. Either Manchester United needs to win for the Bills to lose, or the Bills need to win for Manchester United to lose. It's horrendous. I don't know how to explain it, but
it doesn't add up.
It doesn't add up. You're right, but I'm all right. You know, the game was interesting to say the least, and we'll definitely get into it. But you know, can't really complain too much after a Buffalo win.
No, you can't. But you can complain about the Manchester United loss. I woke
abysmal.
Up
abysmal. Abysmal. Yeah,
I woke up like mid game. I turned.
I was
it on.
Hungover.
Oh, nice.
I woke up specifically. I was like, I'm gonna wake up at 8:30 to watch this game after Halloween party. Full of boomers, but here I was watching Manchester United lose 1-0 to Bournemouth, and it was horrendous. I just couldn't even. It was terrible.
It'll sober you up at least.
Yeah,
it did. Watching that, you're just like, oh my god, this is probably not great. West Ham, they lost to Newcastle, I think, so that's not good. I did watch the Berlin Derby though. And people say Berlin's not a football town. That was insane. There were flares, smoke. Dude, Berlin, crazy town. Anyway, side note, that's all useless. Returning for his second consecutive week. Finally, he's back. It's Justin DeLauro. How are you, D-Lo?
I'm doing great. It's great to be, you know, back-to-back. One more, and then we'll have a streak.
Going back-to-back. Or, I don't know, it's a Drake song. I don't know what it is. It's either back to back or back to bed. I've never been able to determine the lyric,
it's
and I've never looked it up.
That is the name of the song, I believe.
Is back to bed or back to back?
Back to back. Like, all right. You're winning back to back.
Well, that makes more sense than back to bed.
That could also be Drake. I don't know.
That's a different album. So, yeah, the Buffalo Bills, they won. They emerged victorious from their Week 9 matchup with the lowly Washington Redskins. I said in the intro that it was a dominant win. It wasn't. I was just being sarcastic. Fooled you. But before I get into this win, and we all know it was a doozy, and we have much to say about this win, but I want to talk about something that happened earlier this week, and that was the New England Patriots. They waived wide receiver Josh Gordon. Now, Josh Gordon is kind of like, I'm trying to think of a way to describe this. He's kind of like a unicorn because, like, he's had maybe one good year, or he's like Bigfoot, where it's like you swear he's there. You swear he's good, but, like, there's no evidence supporting that. You just kind of assume, unless you don't assume Bigfoot's real, in which case you're wrong. But anyway, Josh Gordon, he got waived by the New England Patriots, and the Buffalo Bills could have claimed him. The Buffalo Bills had the opportunity to claim him. So did like 21 other teams before them or something like that. 22 or 23 other teams. All of those teams did not place a claim on him. And the Buffalo Bills did not either. He went to the Seattle Seahawks. Josh Gordon, of course, very talented. The production, besides the 1 year he had a 1,000-yard season in Cleveland, the production isn't there, but he is undeniably a very talented wide receiver. And should, or had the Buffalo Bills gotten him, he probably would have been the most talented receiver in that receiving core. But they didn't even place a claim on him, and now he's in Seattle, and we're recording this on Sunday evening. Last I knew, they were losing to Tampa Bay. So he might not be that impactful if he's even playing. But anyway, Josh Gordon, he would have been a nice addition to a Buffalo receiving core that, honestly, it's not bad, but it's not in a position where it should turn away talent when it would undoubtedly improve it. So I'll go to you first, D'Lo. What are your opinions on the Bills just turning down the opportunity to place a claim on Josh Gordon?
I mean, as we look at Gordon, Gordon could have given us somebody who's probably an upgrade over Foster. He's probably an upgrade over anybody else that we have out wide. He doesn't give us the same set that, let's say, Cole Beasley can give us underneath, or McKenzie's kind of shiftiness. But still, it's somebody who probably could have pushed the field and given us a much, much stronger set of hands downfield. I think he's uber talented. I think the problems that follow him are going to follow him for the rest of his career, and that's probably why 31 other teams had no interest in dealing with him. Who knows what would have happened if Sean McDermott, you know, would have gotten the process to him. It probably would have helped, but at the same time, somebody like Pete Carroll probably has the ability to reel him in a little bit and kind of figure out a good way of maximizing his potential out in Seattle. So it is a bit unfortunate because I still think the wide receiver position is a bit of a weakness for us. However, I don't know if Gordon really would have been that absolute perfect locker room type of guy to fit in on and off the field with Buffalo.
McKenna, what are your opinions on Josh Gordon not coming to Buffalo?
I think my opinion on him is that he's been generally busted for weed, which in the NFL it's sort of just a joke to be busted for weed nowadays because it's either decriminalized or legal in a lot of states.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, if that's the case, then why are you still getting busted in the sense of, like, why is the NFL still punishing him for this?
Right, yeah.
And in New York, it's decriminalized. So he could have gone to the Jets or the Giants or the Bills. And he necessarily would have gotten in trouble for that. And then he went to Washington, where it's just completely, like, legal. Where I think that's
I didn't even think about that.
That's honestly, like, the Seahawks are like, if he smokes weed and, you know, it's fine for us because he's not going to get busted for it at all. Because, like, it's legal for everyone here to smoke weed. So I don't know. I think he would have added something to the Bills wide receiver group because at the moment it's okay. Like, it's pretty good. Like, John Brown is a very good receiver. Cole Beasley is a very good receiver. And Gordon would have added something to that in a sense of he can work the intermediate to deep routes very, very well compared to Josh Brown, who we've seen can do that well enough, but can do that as well as Gordon, who seems to be always open, mm-hmm. You know, no matter what sort of route he's running, and he is extremely quick on the catch and run. So it would have been great for the Bills to add him, but also he does have that off the field issue, and no matter where, like as D'Lo said, no matter where he goes, he will have that following him, you know, no matter what.
Yeah, that's all true. My thing is that this Bills receiving core, as I said before, it's not bad. It's not as bad as it was last year. Not nearly as bad as it was last year, because last year it was just like, why are these guys in the NFL? And then you see this year, who were their two best receivers last year? Zay Jones and Robert Foster. Zay Jones, they traded for a fifth. Robert Foster is barely seeing the field.
Andre Holmes.
Yep, Andre Holmes, Kelvin. That receiving core was just trash. This year, it's not bad. It's a serviceable group. But it's not the type of group that I would look at and say, I don't need to improve it. I don't need to take a risk on just a very good receiver who's looking for a new home. And I don't understand why they wouldn't place a claim on him. Because he's on a one-year deal. a $2 million deal. It's not a cap space issue. It would have been $2 million against the cap. I don't even know if they inherit the entire cap because New England waived him. I'm sure they do, but even if they do inherit the entire cap, that's only $2 million. And the Bills are not a team that's pressed against the cap right now. So when you get a, when you have the opportunity to add a player with Josh Gordon's talent, with his favorable salary, with his team-friendly salary, and for you to just say no to that, it really, I don't understand it, because this team preaches about its culture so much, how its culture is so strong. And the fact that people question Josh Gordon's character because he's been busted for weed a few times is funny in the first place. But one or two times. But for people to look at Josh Gordon, if you do think he has character issues, trust your culture. You preach about your culture so much. You trust it so much. If you trust it that much, bring in a troubled guy. Put it to the test. I don't think a player like Josh Gordon would break that locker room. I think that locker room, as someone who's been in that locker room, humble brag, I think it's too strong for one player to break. This is inside knowledge, but Kelvin Benjamin last year. Kelvin Benjamin's a player who, like, I don't want to say he was toxic to that locker room, but he didn't help it. There were multiple days, especially towards the end, when he was off the field, showered, and leaving before the majority of the receivers were off the field, like off the practice field initially. Kelvin Benjamin was just so checked out, and that's why they cut him. So that just showed, and like Terrell Pryor last year, Terrell Pryor was fine in the locker room, but they cut him because he wasn't a fit. So that just shows that this team, if a player isn't a fit, if a player is not working in the culture or on the field, whichever, they're not afraid to get rid of him, to cut ties with him entirely. So for them, especially seeing how the whole Josh Gordon thing panned out, seeing that it, had they placed a claim, they would have gotten him. For them to not even place a claim, and especially with the conversation we had last week with the Bills needing an offensive playmaker if they want to become a playoff contender, I don't think Josh Gordon makes him a playoff contender, but he undeniably improves that receiving core. So when a player, there's literally no risk. You just take on $2 million of salary and get a talented player. If he doesn't work out, cut him. And to just say, no, I'm not touching that, it's really weird. But I guess that's just my takeaways from that, is it's weird that they could have had Josh Gordon. A lot of teams could have had Josh Gordon. And I'm happy Seattle took the swing on that, because Seattle, Russell Wilson's having an MVP-like season. So bring in a player like Josh Gordon, see if he can help Russell Wilson continue that push towards MVP status. So I'm sure people have skipped forward to this point in the podcast anyway. It's the takeaways from the Buffalo Bills win over the Washington Redskins. Before we get into the takeaways, I do this so many times per podcast, I just push the main topic back. But we'll get into it in a few moments here, because we each have one takeaway that we'll go into depth about as per every week. But before we get into the in-depth takeaways, I do just want to quickly talk about the game in general. So Buffalo Bills, as I said before, they win 24-9. Josh Allen had an okay game. Josh Allen, he wasn't asked to throw the ball a lot, 20 times only. 160 yards, that's not a great stat line. But also, he wasn't the problem this game. He had a fumble, he recovered it, but he looked good passing the ball when he had to make throws. McKenna, you said this in Slack before, when he had to make throws, his throws were typically on target. I think he had a few errant passes, but other than that,
the only one I can think of was the one to Josh Brown, which he made up for immediately with the throw to Dawson Knox in, I think it was the second quarter, I think. So yeah, he had a couple not so great throws, but he generally made up for them the next throw after. So yeah,
I 100%. I think Josh Allen probably was the best quarterback in this game. That's not saying much when he was playing against a quarterback making his first career start on the other side, but Josh Allen, best quarterback in this game. Dwayne Haskins, I don't think he looked bad. I really don't. There were a few plays where all the concerns that have been haunting him from the pre-draft period until now, footwork, the main overriding concern with Dwayne Haskins forever was footwork, and there were a few plays this game where that footwork concern made itself evident where just his footwork was awful and his passes sailed as a result. But there were also a few plays where he used his athleticism and just a few plays in general where he made some good throws. I don't think he looked awful, but it wasn't a great game for him necessarily. Isaiah McKenzie, I'll throw to one of you after this, but I do want to talk about Isaiah McKenzie just because last week I went on a passionate rant about Isaiah McKenzie and how it was ridiculous to bench Isaiah McKenzie for Robert Foster. And I even said, if you're going to bench anyone to keep Robert Foster in the game, make it Duke Williams. What has he done? And either Brian Daboll listens to this podcast or he just made a decision so obvious that I even knew to make it. But so he benched Duke Williams this game. And he played Isaiah McKenzie. And what's the other guy? Robert Foster. He did nothing. We're not going to talk about Robert Foster this podcast.
He did get a target.
He had one target, yes. Did he catch the ball?
He did not. No. So he that's as many catches as he's had all season.
Maybe next year. Maybe next year. Don't play him this year. But Isaiah McKenzie, he played. I think in the first quarter, there were a few, was it not like successive plays when they just gave him the ball and he was picking up big chunk. My guy was killing it. They used him in motion all game. And that's, we said last week that offense was lacking a dynamic. It just looked lifeless. And people are going to say it's Devin Singletary. They got Devin Singletary the ball this week, and that's why the offense kind of refound its life. But I want to say a big part of that is due to Isaiah McKenzie, because not even with the yards he's picking up. But Isaiah McKenzie was in motion. It seemed on like every other play almost. Like one or two times a drive, he was in motion. They just use him as a really nice gadget guy, as a guy who the defense has to keep an eye on, as a guy who the defense has to account for. So I hope Daboll learned from his mistake last week. Like, hey, that Isaiah McKenzie kid, he's pretty good. Probably shouldn't bench him for a guy who can only run down the field and not catch the football. Although Robert Foster, I think he did make a special teams tackle, if I remember correctly. So I don't know who's going to get benched moving forward. I don't know if it's going to be Robert Foster or Duke Williams. I would lean towards benching Robert Foster. I would want to put Duke Williams in the game, but whatever you do, do not put Isaiah McKenzie on the bench. You could have claimed Josh Gordon. Then you could have benched Isaiah McKenzie, and I would have been like, okay, whatever, you got a better receiver. But Isaiah McKenzie, with what they have, there's no reason. With this receiving core, there is no situation where Isaiah McKenzie should be on the bench. So that's the general overview of the game. So now we will get into our deeper takeaways. And we'll start with you, McKenna, because you're the only one with a positive takeaway. So what's your takeaway from
this
game?
That's generally how it goes for the takeaways. I'm generally more positive than everyone else, but my takeaway this week is that Devin Singletary should be the starting running back for the Buffalo Bills. And sure, he played one of the worst teams in football, but I think he has proved that in the modern NFL, he is a better running back than Frank Gore. Like, don't get me wrong, I love, like, everyone who's ever met Frank Gore has loved Frank Gore because he is such a good guy and such like a, in the locker room, he's such a team player and always wants to succeed. But he's almost a one-trick pony in the sense that you give him the ball 3rd and 1 and then he converts it. But
sometimes
not this game. It was awful, and that might be because Brian Daboll didn't do his best in trying to, as you said on Slack earlier, to disguise the fact that they're trying to give him the ball. But Devin Singletary can do way more than Frank Gore can in every facet of the game. He's a more dynamic runner. He's a more dynamic pass catcher. And he can just make plays at the line of scrimmage that Frank Gore can't anymore because Frank Gore is, what, 300 years old?
Something like that, yeah.
Well, it was a battle between old versus old today. And
Yeah.
And young won. Zoomers, baby.
Adrian Peterson lit it up in the first half, at least.
Oh, he did. We'll get into that.
He did. But throughout the game, Devin Singletary was making big plays. And whether it was at the line of scrimmage, like making people miss, which pretty much everyone at Bills Wire tweeted about at one point during the game, he was making big plays. And just some stats. I only have one stat, really. He one stat, which
I have some stats. Here's one.
It can be two. He totaled for 140 yards, like total 140 yards, which is very impressive. But 95 of them were through the ground, which I think Frank Gore had 100-yard game this season when it was against the Patriots, who were letting the Bills run the ball no matter what because Josh Allen wouldn't beat them throwing the ball.
Yeah.
So that is my takeaway. Devin Singletary needs to start the game more because needs to be the starting running back more and get more touches because he is a better running back than Frank Gore at this time in the NFL because he'll score. He can score in the passing game, in the rushing game. If you give him the ball, he will make big plays, which he has shown on against the Redskins, really. So that is my takeaway. You talked about how he might not be the X factor, but still giving him more touches is better than not giving him any touches at all.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I thought Devin Singletary had a really good game. And before I get into my thoughts on him, D'Lo, anything to add on Devin Singletary?
No, I think it was great. We knew that they had to get Singletary some more touches. With respect to Gore, it's almost like they felt like they didn't have a secondary plan for him. Like the whole idea was we're going to bull him between, you know, in the A gap and hope for the best. And our interior line could not move Washington's interior line. You saw the fourth down play where they got stuffed. You saw when they tried to rush Gore three times in a row at the goal line.
Oh my God.
And that was painful. So, I mean,
literally the same play three times in a row.
Yeah.
Literally.
I mean, they just wanted to get the poor guy a touchdown. They couldn't get 6 inches. So, story of the Bills' life. But I don't know. It was weird. I mean, I'm glad for Singletary. I think it shows that he can handle a load. And I think it's a genius idea to, you know, give him more touches against the Redskins and then kind of build him up even more and even more. So it's not like he's even going against, let's say, I don't know, like Dallas's defense in a few weeks and we're trying to throw him with, you know, 20 touches. So I think it works out really, really well that he had a nice day today and that'll foster a little more confidence for us with Singletary running wild.
Yeah, I started Singletary in fantasy today and he helped my teams just beatdown of McKenna's team. I believe I'm winning like 150 to something right now.
It is a
very dominant victory over there. And sorry, McKenna, didn't mean to put you on blast.
I
like
roasted
that,
you like week one of the podcast, so it's fine.
Yeah, your first appearance. That was like, I said something. I was just like, oh, Drew Brees got me negative 0.5 points. And you're just like, oh, it doesn't matter. I had already won by that time. I was like, oh, you're right. But anyway, Devin Singletary, he is the, I don't want to say he's the prototypical modern running back because he is missing a very important attribute that running backs have, and that's speed. But they use him in ways which is, I know, you're probably going to be surprised that I'm saying the Buffalo Bills are using like contemporary offensive, you know, just ideas and just modern offensive ideas, but they're using Devin Singletary in ways that a modern running back should be used, and that's on the ground and through the air. They're getting him the ball out of the backfield, and that's kind of the wave of running backs nowadays. You want a running back who not only, you know, can run the ball because that's kind of their job, but being a weapon out of the backfield is kind of nearly as important in today's NFL with screen passes and just RPOs, everything. You need a running back who can catch the football. And Devin Singletary, he didn't do a lot of that at FAU, but he's done that this year. And as we saw today, I think he had 45 yards through the air, maybe all of which came on that screen pass. But hey, that was a good screen pass. On that screen pass, he showcased his agility, his elusiveness. And when was the last time you saw a Bills running back make defenders miss? I almost just had a speech impediment there. I almost said myth. When was the last time you saw a Bills running back make a defender miss with his feet by just juking him out? CJ Spiller, maybe like 2016 LeSean McCoy.
McCoy did a good job at doing it behind the line of scrimmage.
Oh yeah, he did a great job of dancing. Yeah. He could have been on Dancing with the Stars if he wanted to be, but Devin Singletary, like we were talking before the show, D'Lo, he gets in front of the line of scrimmage, and yes, then he starts making moves. It's really unique to see. It's a really unique concept of picking up yardage. But he's, yeah, Devin Singletary, I think, well, statistically, this was his best game, and I just think overall this was his best game. They put the load on him. Oh, Jesus, why did I say that?
He carried the load for Buffalo.
Thank you. He carried the load for Buffalo, and he... He was great. Devin Singletary had a very good game. Best of the year, better than Frank Gore. And I do agree, McKenna. I think that was always their plan. I think it was to give Frank Gore the majority of the carries in the beginning of the season and then slowly transition to Devin Singletary as the season went on, as Devin Singletary got more acclimated to the NFL. And then also that would have helped them just change up midseason because teams would have been preparing for Frank Gore. And then all of a sudden they get Devin Singletary. But the injury made them focus more on Frank Gore, but now that Devin Singletary's back, and as we saw today, he's at 100%, I think as the season progresses, you will see Devin Singletary become the featured back, and Frank Gore, as he should be at 36 years of age, being that more situational guy. And I did forget to add this. D'Lo, you talked before about how with Frank Gore, they just kind of lined him up on third and one. Yeah. That was kind of his role today.
That was the strategy. It was unreal. It was, if you're a defensive coordinator, you see Frank Gore going in, you know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Put all your fat guys right in the middle of the line and put De'Ron Payne in the like. It was just frustrating because you just thought that there was no way that Gore was going to have any shot of breaking loose.
It's almost like Brian Daboll doesn't have enough time in the week. It's like... He figured some stuff out. He's like, all right, I'm putting Isaiah McKenzie back in. This is how I'm going to use him. I'm going to make Devin Singletary a featured part of the game, a part of the attack, and this is the ways I'm going to use him. With Cole Beasley and John Brown, this is the way we're going to attack that weak Redskins defense. And then he was showing this to Sean McDermott, and McDermott's like, okay, really good stuff. How are you going to use Frank Gore? And Dave was just like, oh, my God. Oh, my God, I forgot about Frank Gore. What am I going to do? Oh, Jesus. And he's like, on third and one. And McDermott's like, okay, that works for me. And then he didn't realize there were going to be 10 or 11 third and ones in this game. And he's just like, oh my God, I've totally forgot. And so he used them on third and one. And very uncreative play calling. Yeah. Just in general straight today, for the most part. But in short yardage situations, as you said, D'Lo, to call the same exact play three times in a row, from the 1 yard line, just full set, have Dawson Knox run behind Josh Allen, cut back out, and then up the middle to the opposite side with Frank Gore. It just to do that three times and for it to not pick up an inch any of the times, it's like, what is going on? Brian Daboll, what are you thinking? Like, after it happened the second time, they showed him on the sideline talking underneath the sheet of paper. And I made a joke. I was like, haha, they wouldn't expect me to do it a third time. And then he did it a third time, and they did expect it. And then on fourth down, he did trick them a little bit because he pretended he was going to do the same play. And then Josh Allen just took it. So it was like, bam, gotcha. But just in general, every time there was a third or fourth and short situation, it was either a QB sneak or Frank Gore handoff up the middle. It's just like if you're Washington and you watch any tape, if you've watched any Frank Gore performance over the last 20 years or any Josh Allen performance over the last year and a half, you know that if it's short yardage, they're going to either Josh Allen or Frank Gore. So you know how to defend that. So just for Brian Daboll not to pick up on that after the third or fourth time it happened and not call a more creative play call, that's just, I don't know. I'm losing faith in Brian Daboll. I really am. I'm not ready to hit the panic button, but... at this point, I don't know what his long-term future is in Buffalo. So anything to add from either of you before we move on to our next takeaway here?
I just think it's a bigger problem that the interior of our line couldn't get any push on multiple plays in a row.
That is true.
That's a little worrisome. It's just, really, I feel like our offensive line should have been better on at least one of those three attempts.
That is true. And also, as we said, Devin Singletary kind of is, he has agility. He can make defenders miss. So I just think the interior of the line today, I think there were execution issues there. Whereas Devin Singletary can kind of disguise that a little bit of that by making a defender miss and kicking it outside if he has to. Frank Gore just really can't do that anymore. Frank Gore is putting his head down, and if there's no holes, he's not creating holes. He's not bouncing outside anymore. I love Frank Gore, but that's not his game, whereas it is Devin Singletary's game. So I think his agility and youth almost just kind of disguise some of the offensive line struggles today. So I think we're going to go to my takeaway next, because D'Lo, yours is more of a general takeaway, more of a just whole season, and not a whole, it kind of is a whole season review.
It's a global issue.
It's a global issue, whereas mine is more of a regional issue, if you will. And that region is the defensive side of the ball. Guys, I think it's safe to say we've been had. When it comes to the Bills' defense, we've been had. We've been bamboozled, led astray. What's a Stephen A. Smith meme? It's something like that. Bamboozled. But this defense, I've been singing the praises all season on this podcast. I've been saying this defense is elite. It's very good. I don't know if this is an elite defense. Is it a good defense? Yes. But is it one of the best in the league? It's good, but I wouldn't put it in the same category as New England's or anyone else up there, because with this Washington offense, they've been putrid all year. This whole Washington team has been putrid all year. And you go into this game with a quarterback making his first career start. Combine that with the fact that Adrian Peterson is literally their only good offensive player. You should know, hey, Adrian Peterson's going to get a lot of carries today. And they just let Adrian Peterson run rampant on them. In the first half, what did he have? Like 100 yards, 99 yards in the first half?
101.
101. Zoe 101 yards in the first half. That is just, I want to say that's inexcusable. It's inexcusable to let a 34-year-old Adrian Peterson, who you know is going to be their workhorse, who you know is going to be the focus of their offense, to let him come into your house and in the first half rush for over 100 yards off a game where you let over 200 rushing yards? Give me a break. Figure that out. Figure that out, interior of the offensive line. And that's what it was. It wasn't like he was cutting anything to the outside. The majority of his yards came off runs up the middle, and then he got to the second level, and it was up to the secondary to make tackles. But I just the defense in general, the interior of the offensive line in the first half especially, for the second week in a row, sucked. The secondary, I don't want to say it was bad, but, I mean, Dwayne Haskins didn't have a bad game. Dwayne Haskins, I think his issues were more caused to an extent by his own fault, by his own flaws, than they were the strength of the secondary. The secondary did come up with some big plays, but I also believe that Dwayne Haskins kind of just struggled as a quarterback. The defensive front four, I don't think, was all that strong. I think they really should have added a pass rusher, or if they can somehow add a pass rusher, they should. They had a few sacks, but again, I think those can be attributed more to Washington being without their franchise left tackle and having a rookie quarterback back there than it can be just the dominant pass rush. How many sacks did they end up with? Trent Murphy had one, Jordan Phillips had one.
They had four.
They had four. That's not a bad day, but also you're playing against a team with an awful offensive line and a quarterback making his first start. You should feast. I don't think they feasted. When do we talk about Ed Oliver? Because I think not bad might be the best way you can, that might be the highest praise you can give him. Jordan Phillips has been their best defensive tackle this year. And if you would have told me that in week one, I would have laughed at you. Because he was, their third choice entering this? Fourth choice? You could have made an argument at the beginning of this year that he was their worst defensive tackle. We're now in week nine, and he's been very good. But, Ed Oliver has been okay. Star Latulele is trash. I don't know why they ever gave Star Latulele that contract. And then they just have a revolving door now after Harrison Phillips went out. It was Kyle Picot, who wasn't good, and now VT, Vincent Taylor, who was okay in his Bills debut. But other than that, I don't know. I really don't know what to make of this defense, just because it hasn't looked that strong. This is a game that, and granted, it wasn't a bad game. It was the type of game that the Bills should have dominated, and it wasn't necessarily a close game, but it wasn't that type of performance that you would have liked to have seen from the defense. I think in the second half they did come out and they did make adjustments and they really did improve, but I just would have liked it sucked in the first half just to see after last week what Philly did to him with Jordan Howard and Miles Sanders for AP to come out and look like he was, what, 30 or 24 instead of 34. It just to look like vintage AP and just make the Bills interior defenders look foolish. It's just like, what are you doing, Buffalo? And again, they did make adjustments, but I don't know if this defense is as good as we thought it was. So D'Lo, anything to add about that?
No, I think the only good thing, and you said, is the second half they did figure it out. Whatever adjustments that Sean McDermott made helped out, because I think Peterson had 7 yards in the second half rushing. Yeah. So that was an improvement, but it's really surprising that the team gets slapped around in the first half like that, you know, especially with that front four that we thought was going to be, you know, a strong part of the unit, you know, ends up being ultimately the weakest part of the unit. And that ends up putting, you know, a little bit more stress on, you know, the linebackers in the secondary, although the secondary really didn't have to, you know, sweat too much today because, you know, Haskins was trying to figure things out. But still, it would have been nice to see that front four like really lock it down and make Haskins become a thrower a little bit more and let them lean a little bit less on, you know, Peterson to start the game.
Yeah, they never, and that might be part of the reason why they lost, is they're just a bad team. But it never became like a Haskins show. They never put the load on Haskins. I have to stop saying that. They never made Haskins carry the load. It was never, they never made Dwayne Haskins like throw, like, I can't even
talk. He wasn't the focal point at all. They didn't put it on his back. They didn't, you know, make him carry the offense.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I got
you. Thank you, D'Lo. Thank you. That's why you're the English teacher. honest question. If somebody wrote in a paper, they put the load on him, what would you have? What, would you just, like, circle it and put a question mark?
I'd be like, that's an interesting metaphor.
Yes, very, very interesting.
That's an interesting metaphor.
But the linebackers, and I honestly think part of it might just be that they didn't have much to do today. That honestly might be it, because it was such a run heavy attack, especially in the first half, and the interior of the defense was exposed. And then in the second half, it was just like everything kind of fell apart. Washington couldn't get anything going on the ground, and Dwayne Haskins kind of, I don't want to say he shot himself in the foot because he didn't play poorly, but also he didn't play well. So I think it's just, it wasn't a awful game from the Bills defense. They did make the necessary adjustments, and then after that, the Washington offense just looked pedestrian, which it should have looked. But given that first half and given what we saw last week, I don't know if I can confidently say this Bills defense is among the best in the league. So I think that's just my overall takeaways from this game regarding the defense. McKenna, any?
Yeah, I can agree in a sense that the run defense is very poor, but they did make the key adjustments in the second half, which is important, but they have been slightly exposed the past two games, you know? The run defense is not good. The first couple games, teams just tried to throw the ball against the Bills, and it never really worked because the secondary is very good. And the one thing I can say about the secondary is that they saved a lot of plays, honestly, against Adrian Peterson. Like, it was Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde making really touchdown-saving tackles against Adrian Peterson that really saved the game. So, yeah, they aren't elite as they thought we were, you know, earlier in the season. But hopefully they can sort of regain some form going into Cleveland on Sunday, and hopefully they can stop Nick Chubb and make Baker Mayfield feel uncomfortable in the pocket. So yeah, I agree. Yeah, they're not elite yet.
Well, they were elite, and that's what's so worrisome about it. They were
elite. Or were they just playing good defense against bad offenses?
It might be both. I think they were very good. I think we all had very high hopes for this defense coming in, regardless of who they were playing. In the first few games, they were just playing lights out. And that raises the question, was Harrison Phillips really that integral to the run defense? I mean, he was just kind of a guy that you looked at beforehand, and you were like, oh yeah, he's there. He's Harrison Phillips. But, I mean, since it's not like, boom, then it happened. It wasn't like as soon as Harrison Phillips got hurt, the run defense started to deteriorate. But it's been a slow but sure thing. And if you can look at one event, it's kind of Harrison Phillips going down. And then after that, the run defense has been suspect. And then the past 2 weeks, it's just been terrible. Not there whatsoever. So I don't know if Harrison Phillips was really the cog there, but I don't know what they have to do, but they have to get somebody. Is it Vincent Taylor who's going to be there to clog up the running lanes? I don't know, but they have to figure something out. And I would not be opposed to them cutting Star Latulele, because who's going to trade for him? And that's another thing from Bill's Twitter. It's like, trade Star. It's like, who's going to take Star and that contract? That's seriously just Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean being like, hey, we know he's good. Let's give him money. And it's like, well,
his contract might be the biggest mistake that this front office has made, you know, since they started, because no one will take it. And he's proven that he's not worth that amount of money since he signed.
Oh, it might be him. It might be Trent Murphy's contract's pretty bad.
At least Trent Murphy's getting sacks, you know? Like, the one thing he's signed to do, he's making sacks. But, you know, Star, like, hasn't had that one game where you're like, oh, yeah, he's been dominant. Which is hard for defensive linemen, but still, like, has he had a game where his name has been called more than two or three times?
No, because he's – I don't like – I hate to say this. He's just not a good football player. He's better football player than me, obviously. I think everyone in the NFL is a better football player than me. But it just – I don't know why he's there. What is his purpose?
It was to stop the run, I think. But then
he can't do that. He can't do that anymore. He offers nothing as a pass rusher. So I don't understand what his purpose is besides get a lot of money. So good for him. He played the system. So, D'Lo, what's your takeaway from this game? You got a doozy.
Oh, my takeaway is, once again, they did not dominate an inferior team. Mm-hmm. I'm still waiting for the Bills to play a full 60-minute game. Start to finish, just dominate, just wipe the floor with some team that they're better than. And I obviously know that they're not going to score on every possession. They're not going to force turnovers every possession. But it's like, it just seems like they take the foot off the gas.
They do.
For another metaphor. So the first half, they score on all three of their possessions. 17-6 or 17-3? 17-6, right?
6, yeah.
So, and then all of a sudden, they come out in the third quarter, and it's just a snooze fest. There's nothing from the offense. And I don't know if part of it is because they're playing Washington, and there didn't necessarily need to be, like, this sense of urgency. But it would have been nice just to, like, blow Washington out and show, you know what, last week was an aberration, you know what, we got smoked by Philadelphia, but we could still come back and really show that, you know what, we're still a good team, we could still figure out how to throw the ball, we could still figure out how to, you know, force turnovers, we could still do all of those things. And the third quarter hit, and it was like, Washington's still in this game. Mm-hmm. And then it's 17-9, and it's like, it's only one score, and it takes until, you know, 5 minutes left in the fourth to finally have that great drive. The defense, you know, Tre'Davious White gets the sack, and then, you know, offensively they score and put the game out with a Singletary's run. But it just feels like, man, why can't we just knock a team out for 60 minutes? You know, I go back to like week 17 last year against Miami, when Josh Allen went unconscious and had 5 touchdowns, and we just blew them out 42-17. Like, that's the type of game that I'm waiting for. Like, I don't want us to just hang around with an inferior team.
You brought up, you don't know if it was just because it was Washington. I don't think it is, because I think it was the Giants game.
Oh, yeah.
They killed it in the first half. They took their foot off the gas, and then they kind of made a comeback. The Bengals, they took their foot off the gas.
Yeah.
Bengals came back and took the lead for a short time. They get too comfortable. After the first half, when they have even a 2-score lead, even if it's like a 10-point lead, if it's more than a touchdown or a field goal, they're like, okay, I trust the defense to just sit back, and, you know, Brian Daboll's like, I'll kick my feet up for the rest of the game because it really doesn't matter. My defense, or the defense, isn't going to let any touchdowns in. They're not going to let any field goals in. They're just going to be a brick wall. So I don't have to do anything. I can just go out there, kill the clock, and we're good. When, as we've seen, that's not what happens. Thankfully, today, I mean, Washington, and as you said, D'Lo, they've let inferior teams hang around. There are three, like, very bad, laughable teams in the league this year. That's Cincinnati, Miami, and Washington. And the Bills...
I mean, at least they're 3-0 against them.
Yeah, they're 3-0. They've beaten all of them. And this, out of all three of those games, is probably the most decisive victory. But a 24-9 victory is not a decisive victory. They were up one score in the fourth quarter. The game was never out of reach for Washington. And I think that goes back to play calling and just the lack of a killer mentality. They don't want to put games away, and I don't know why that is. Do they not trust Josh Allen? Are they like, we're up two scores. If I let Josh Allen make plays, is he going to get too comfortable and make throws that he shouldn't be making, and then he'll turn the ball over, and then that gives the game to them? That could be it, but then that could allow Josh, or that could in turn make Josh Allen play scared, which would I rather my quarterback play scared or play confident? I think that's a very easy decision to make. I just don't understand why, when you are up two scores in the second half, why you're just like, oh no, I don't care.
I'm just thinking, imagine what happens if when Josh Allen fumbles early in the fourth quarter, if that's not recovered by the Bills, if Quentin Spain doesn't get that ball. I mean, oh, that's, it's 17-9.
We all saw all of a sudden, it on against the Eagles. You know, the Eagles go on to score, and obviously it's a different sort of situation, but they go on to score, and then they go on to win the game because the momentum completely shifts in their favor. But this is something we've talked about on the podcast a lot before, that maybe it's the Bills' offense as a whole, maybe it's Brian Daboll, but they do just feel too comfortable when it's too close of a game. No matter how good the Bills' defense is, anything can happen, and they can let in a score and make it a closer game than it needs to be. So, yeah, whether it's Daboll or it's Josh Allen, like, I think Josh Allen had a good-ish game today. Like,
he wasn't bad.
Yeah, like, you know, Daboll didn't give him much to do. But I think he would have done better if Daboll was like, hey, you can throw it 30 times today. You know, you're playing one of the worst teams in football. You'll rack up yards no matter what. So, yeah, like, they need to kill off worse teams. And playing the Browns next week, who may have a worse record, but many consider aren't a worse team in the sense. If the Bills are up 14-0 on them, or 14 points on them, they'll need to be able to kill them off, you know, going into whatever quarter it is, because they have decent players.
Yeah, and when we start getting into game management, I think that's more McDermott than it is Daboll. I don't like Daboll's play calling, but also I think if McDermott let him call a full game, you might see him change up his play calling. But I think, like you said, D'Lo, they don't play a full game, and I think that's kind of... I think that goes back to the head coach. He decides the tempo. He decides... He doesn't explicitly call the offensive plays, but I think he kind of has a say in the type of plays that are called. And like, okay, you're trying to run out the clock here. You're trying to get into field goal range. You're trying to score a touchdown. And obviously teams will say that's, you know, we try to score a touchdown every drive. That's just not true. But I think it's game management and the lack of a killer instinct, which we've said on this podcast dating back weeks, but that's just the issue with this team. With the offense is sometimes it's execution, but there are games where, like today, I think the execution overall is pretty good. It's just questionable play calling, pedestrian, predictable play calling, and just game management issues. So as long as the Bills keep playing bad teams, they might eke out wins. I couldn't get that word last week. I couldn't formulate that sentence. Got it this week. If they continue to play bad games, they should eke out wins. But if they play even a competent team, because who have they played this year that you could argue is competent? The Titans?
The Patriots.
I mean, who have they beaten? Sorry.
Yeah, Titans.
Titans.
Who have they beaten this year that's competent?
The Titans are probably the closest thing.
The closest to competence.
Who else have they beaten? Lost to a rookie quarterback this week. I think I don't know if they've lost yet, but they were losing the last time I checked.
The Titans, they lost to Kyle Allen. Oh, second time they lost to Allen. Oof. But yeah, the Jets who lost to the Dolphins today.
Ugh.
The Giants with Eli. Bengals who are 0-8, who just benched Andy Dalton. Then they lost to the Patriots. And then Tennessee who, they're okay.
They're fine.
And then they came back to who? Miami.
The Bengals, the Jets.
Miami, Eagles. It's just this team, if they're playing a competent team, they struggle. Everything falls apart. And like, and they're just barely beating teams that are bad. So it's just, I hate that people are like, oh, they're 6-2, just, you know, they're doing well. And it's like, well, if you watch the game, you see that they're not a dominant team whatsoever. And when they do play a team that good teams should put up a fight against, they just crumble, they collapse. So really, really bad way to end this podcast.
Well, here's the thing. Are they trending in the right direction? That might be the way to look at it. Even though everything isn't great at all times, do we feel like they're ascending? They're 6-2. Do we think that they're moving in a direction to maybe compete against
like
better
this
teams?
Year or in general?
This year in general. Like I'm not saying Super Bowl, but I'm saying like wild card weekend, do we have a shot at thinking about moving on in the playoffs?
Yes.
No.
I say yes. Ooh. Because most competent teams will pass the ball no matter what. And that's what the Bills are good at defending, passing the ball. So unless they're playing, you know, Lamar Jackson,
who they play later this year.
That's going to be a
fun
game.
Later, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's the thing, though. I think the Bills' defense, even though they're not necessarily the most elite defense, they're still good at tackling smaller running backs, which when Lamar Jackson is running the ball, he's like 5'10", you know, super skinny. They can bring him down, and if they're forcing him to throw the football, which he had a couple of good games, he still hasn't consistently proven he's good at throwing the football, I think the Bills have a chance at beating them. And I don't know who else they'd necessarily be playing in the wild card. Is it the Raiders or the Texans?
Oh, no. They would play the Texans, Ravens they could play in the wild card, Chiefs, hypothetically. A Colts lost today.
Even the Chiefs, they're a passing team. Like Mahomes has struggled against better-than-average defenses, which the Bills are a better-than-average defense. Like, I think Mahomes is still one of the best quarterbacks.
I take the Chiefs by like 20.
Really?
I don't think we could hang with them.
I think if the Bills can relatively keep the game in check, this might be the homer coming out in me. Like Josh Allen has proven that he can win games in the fourth quarter. So if it's like a, you know, close-ish game. The Chiefs have a terrible defense.
But he also hasn't done that against good teams.
Well,
he got killed by the Patriots this year. He got killed by the Eagles.
Yeah, but are the Chiefs' defense a Patriots level or even the Eagles level defense?
Well, I'm thinking it's more mental. I don't really think it's defense. I just think when Josh Allen plays a good team, I think he's like, "Oh, I have to be the star. Eyes are on me. I have to go out there and make big plays." And that just it doesn't work.
Okay.
I don't think he's there yet. I think it's a I was watching Premier League this morning and JJ Watt said something like JJ Watt was on a Premier League show and JJ Watt was like, when you ask young players to take on a big role, sometimes they're naive enough to believe that they can accomplish unbelievable things. And Josh Allen, I think, even though he's not asked to do that, I think when he does play in big games, he's naive enough to think, like, oh, all eyes are on me. I can go out there. I can be the reason why this team wins. And it doesn't work. Yeah, and he does hero ball, rolls out, throws it over the middle, throws an interception. He's like, oh, my God, why did I do that? I told myself not to do that, and I do that. But just going back to the whole playoffs thing, like, hypothetically, like you said, D'Lo, they get killed by the Chiefs. Ravens, I think they probably get killed by the Ravens, especially if they can't defend the run. Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram are just going to run over them. And who else could they play? Texans.
Well, right now it's the Colts. Well, they could play the Texans or Colts. Shoot.
Colts, they would kill them.
It's you know what? They would play Houston probably because the Colts would be the sixth seed as of right now.
Houston,
no J.J. Watt.
No J.J. Watt, no Clowney.
I mean, that brings it down to what? They're underdog by what, 7?
Yeah. Fourth quarter, Houston though. Would be a winnable game. And that would be fun because that would be the first time Buffalo played a Houston team in the playoffs in what? God, few decades?
And could you imagine just hearing about Deshaun Watson against Allen? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be a good
one. I want to punch myself in the face all week.
But this is
two
my best
case scenario.
Two young quarterbacks
going at it, no matter, you know.
Yeah, exactly. This is my best case scenario because I think their schedule, I've said this 100 times, but their schedule this year, they should make the playoffs. They should. By the way, guys,
Cleveland lost.
Cleveland just lost to Denver.
Yikes.
So,
do you think, here's a question. Do you think Cleveland implodes next week if the Bills win?
I think they implode now because they lost to Denver. Denver is terrible, and the Bills play Denver in like 2 or 3 weeks after. Yeah, after Miami.
After Cleveland, yeah.
The Bills are going to be 12-4 and end up playing like a 9-7 team in the wild card. Oh God, it's just
well, that's what's going to happen.
It's going to happen. It's just the way of life right now.
Is their schedule like I ran this down last week too? But their schedule, they're going to get in there just because they beat bad teams, even if it's not always pretty. They typically beat bad teams, and they don't have many good teams left on their schedule, so they'll get in there at 10-6 or 11-5, maybe even 12-4. They'll get probably blown out in the wild card round. If not blown out, they'll lose. But you'll see, hopefully you'll see potential free agents look at this team and be like, okay, they're headed in the right direction. Josh Allen looks good. Sean McDermott's a solid coach, and they have a lot of cap space. So hopefully their playoff performance and given their cap space because they'll make the playoffs and given their cap space, they'll be able to attract a few big name guys to come here where next year they can come with their just the solid foundation they built on and their additions. They'll make a run next year, maybe not to the Super Bowl, but they'll be better positioned for a deep run next year than they are this year, but they should make the playoffs this year. So that would be my best case scenario for this year. Anything to add here on this, this game, this beautiful Washington Redskins Buffalo Bills game, or just the Bills in general before we get out of here?
I think, sorry, go for it.
Tell you,
I just threw to someone.
I just think that I'm the biggest homer out of all of you. So I'm just like, you know what? The Bills have been beating terrible teams, but you know, screw it. They'll go on to the Super Bowl. Who cares?
I try to stay
in the podcast, at least in my writing, I'm fairly more objective. But right now, I'm just like, who cares? They're 6-2. Going to the Super Bowl. Give us the Lombardi Trophy right now.
See, I'm older than all of y'all. So I've seen this team go through like a bunch of substitute teachers for the last like 2 decades at quarterback. And just where there were moments where we should have been good and just fell apart. You know, like in 04 when we played like the Pittsburgh Steelers JV team and lost and then lost out on the playoffs then. And, you know, we end up getting rid of Wade Phillips, who was what, 29-19, and then ultimately we go into 2 decades of like shame spiral because who knows why. So it's, I've seen them be really good, you know, for the 4 Super Bowls, but then it's just been so horrendous. I've always like taken a step back when people are like, yeah, we got it, Josh Allen's our guy, or like, you know, Singletary's gonna run wild, or you know, Tre'Davious White's going to have 97 interceptions or whatever it is. That's why I always like take a step back, because I'm like, man, I've seen this script before and I've been led down that path. I thought, you know, oh, there was a time that J.P. Lossman looked good and Trent Edwards was going to be like an MVP candidate, and then he got his brain scrambled, and then C.J. Spiller was amazing, and then we had to rotate him with Fred Jackson, and it just illogical things that the team has done. So that's why I kind of hold out hope and pump the brakes all the time, because man, as much as it's going great right now, I mean, this team could take a nosedive at any time. I mean, imagine if they lose next week against Cleveland, then everybody's going to lose their mind. Realistically, they should beat Cleveland. They should beat Miami. They should beat Denver. I mean, our next really like stressful game should be Thanksgiving, but who knows? Like, who knows what they're going to do? So
let me look at the rest of the schedule before we get out of here, and then we'll give our official
go Bills.
Go Bills.
Go Bills.
No.
While you're looking up the schedule, Star Laetulia has a potential out after the 2020 season.
Oh, that's too long.
So if we cut him this year, he'd be a $7.8 million cap hit. Or that'd be the dead cap, 7.8, down to 5.2, down to 2.6 over the next 3 years. His whole goal is supposed to be to line up as what? Like a one tech, be a space eater, and he doesn't. I saw him chasing somebody today. It looked rugged.
Well, why'd you sign that contract in the first place? That's my question.
Because we only signed former Panthers.
Who thought, yes, Star Laetulia will be worth every penny of that besides Lorenzo Alexander to Nick Woten on Twitter? Whatever. All right, so looking at the rest of the schedule, we have Buffalo at Cleveland next week. That should be a win. Cleveland's imploding. Baker Mayfield's regressing. Freddie Kitchens is an awful head coach. Awful head coach. That should be 7-2. Then they go to Miami the next week. That's
8-2.
8-2. Denver home the next week. Denver just beat Cleveland, so maybe
9-2.
But
Yeah.
Who's going to be their quarterback for that? Who's Denver's quarterback?
It doesn't matter.
Something would have. Oh God.
Allen. Whatever.
Hey, all three Allens won today.
Yeah, that was the first time in NFL history that three players with the last name of Allen started at quarterback.
Ain't that something?
Something else.
You'll love to see it. So then what? What is that? 9-2?
9-2.
Dallas. They could win Dallas, but let's say they don't.
Yeah, that's a fair. That could be a toss-up no matter what.
So 9-3.
Yeah, 9-3. Sure.
Baltimore at Buffalo.
A toss-up.
Let's say 9-4. At Pittsburgh.
That one's 50-50 to me. Like
I think the Bills win that because James Conner isn't that good, I think. And the Pittsburgh defense isn't that good.
I mean, if I don't give them Baltimore while they're home, I want to give them either Baltimore while they're home or Pittsburgh while they're away.
Those two games are a win between the two of them, no matter what.
Either way, they're 10-4. And then at New England, 10-5. Jets, who just lost to Miami, that's 11-5. That gets you into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that's where we'll leave it off today. Buffalo Bills, 2019 playoff team. Probably not much more than that.
I'm just kidding.
I want to thank you guys for listening, for putting through this, or you know, putting yourself through this 1 hour and 2 minute podcast. No Hofbräu update this week. I don't think it's ever gonna happen, guys. I'm being honest. It's not looking good because I've only been following this train for like 4 or 5 months. Apparently it's been going on for like 5 years. There's people who have been holding out hope for this thing, so I don't want to be one of those people who's just like, in 5 years I'm writing on the Hofbräu Facebook page just like, when are you opening? I'm almost at that territory now. I'm gonna call. They have a number on their Facebook, so I'm gonna call.
The thing is,
like,
there are multiple Hofbräu houses in the area.
In the world, there's none in Buffalo.
There's one in Cleveland.
Let's
there's
just go.
I'm not going to Cleveland.
Let's just go to
one
Germany. In Columbus. Oh, Bill's Kyle Sligi Variety Hour in Munich? Sure.
I would do that in a heartbeat.
Let's do it.
Guys, I would go to Germany. Let's meet up. Oh, actually, somebody sidetracked. Last week we talked about Rasenballsport Leipzig on the podcast.
Sure.
And somebody from Germany tweeted at me, or I said on the podcast how everyone says everyone hates RB Leipzig and how
they're a fake team because they're all money.
Right, and how I talked to my German friend and they were like, oh no, people in Germany, you know, they don't like how it happened, but they respect how they're building the team through the academy and everything. So then a German person, Jens Orlik, tweeted at me and said, hey Kyle Sellegi, of course every normal soccer fan hates Rasenballsport Leipzig. They suck. This project kills my enthusiasms to soccer. So I was like, damn.
Worldwide.
Damn. I didn't even think about it like that. But yeah, Kyle Sellegi Variety Hour has gone worldwide.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you guys for listening. Make sure to follow Bills Wire on Twitter, at The Bills Wire on Facebook, at Bills Wire on Instagram, at The Bills Wire. Make sure to follow D-Lo on Twitter at
JDeLoro, JDiLoro.
Make sure to follow McKenna on Twitter at... Okay. McKenna, what's your Twitter?
Did we lose him?
We lost McKenna. I hope this doesn't mess up with his audio.
Uh-oh.
Let me find McKenna's Twitter real quick. It is...
At McKenna Middle.
There it is. McKenna Middle, there he is! He's back! Make sure to listen to the Bills Wire podcast with Matt and Jeremy. Make sure to subscribe to the Bills Wire iTunes feed or whatever. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Kyle Salagi. So yeah, thanks for listening. Maybe we'll talk to you next week if the Bills beat Cleveland. If they don't, woo! Hey, will Freddie? Question to leave on: will Freddie Kitchens be their head coach by next week when the Bills play them?
He won't be after.
Ooh, there's your
hot take.
But like, wouldn't that be kind of offensive if like the Broncos? What are the Broncos 2-1? This was their second win of the week, second win of the year, and they're like, oh no, Broncos are fine. But then they lose to the then 7-2 Bills, and they're like, that's where we draw the line.
Well, I think once you go to your ninth loss. That'll be their ninth loss, whatever. Once you're at that point where you're not going, the best you could do is 500, I think it's time to pull the plug.
We'll see. I don't like Freddie Kitchens. He'll be a one and done. Adam Gase will be a one and done. And it'll be fun while the Buffalo Bills prosper with the Vince Lombardi trophy.
Yeah, buddy.
Thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.